let's start off tonight before we get into 13 and 14 and kind of catch up what got us into this in the end of chapter 12. Abraham goes to Egypt. Why? Because of the famine in the land. Okay? And when he went down there, told Sarah to do what? Say you're my sister as opposed to my wife. Why? Because he feared for his life. Okay? He's afraid it would kill him. Pharaoh wouldn't take him for his wife. So she did this, apparently, because Pharaoh did take Sarah to his house to be his wife. But kind of brought her into it. What caused Pharaoh to say, whoa, something's wrong here? God sent plagues on the house of Pharaoh. Let him know that something is wrong with this thing. And Pharaoh did what? What was his reaction to it? Gave Sarah back and said, get out. I mean, this is not right. You should have told me she was your wife. I mean, he figured out there was something wrong here. And so he sent Sarah and Abraham, or Sarah and Abram, out. Leave there. So this kind of gets us a running start, because in 13:1, what does it say they did, starting chapter 13 off here? They're leaving there in Egypt. They're going to leave and go where? Go to the south, okay, first. And Mike, we'll get your point here in a minute. Okay, so they're going to leave and go to the south. Now, this is where south is capitalized. They didn't go in the direction of the south. They went to the south. Okay? And it says went to the south. The other versions went into the south. Went into that land, okay? And the Negev is what it's talking about there. So, they're going to leave Egypt down here and go back to Canaan. And they're going to settle then, or go through first. This area down here is called the Negev, N-E-G-E-B or N-E-G-E-V, or the Negev, or the south. So that's where so you think about leaving Egypt and going, they didn't go south, they had to go the wrong direction. They went to the south, to this land here called that. And so, kind of explain about that a little bit maybe. So, we've gone through the first four questions on your paper there are all this review stuff we just did. You catch up with those. And then, get ready now for six. I'll kind of jump ahead there. Six and five are out of order. Get my slides up here. So number six on your paper, Abraham, Sarai, Lot returned from Egypt, traveling through the Negev, N-E-G-E-V, and went to, where'd they stop? Where'd they go in the land of Canaan? To Bethel, okay, right in the middle of the country. Shechem we've already had. When he came to before, when he first came from Haran, he stopped at Shechem, built an altar there, remember that, and worshiped God. Went to Bethel, built one there, and worshiped again. Now they've gone to Egypt, caused the famine, had the lie that Sarah told, come back now, and they're at Bethel again now. So that's number six on your paper there. Then number five, kind of flip-flop out of order here, sorry about that. What's number five say? Abraham was what? Was rich in livestock, silver, and gold. Too many times there. And I don't know how much all this is true. Josephus, we all know, is a great historian. He makes some comments here about this, that not only did he have flocks, he had silver and gold. That's where he got this. This is what we read from the text there. Josephus says he got it by teaching the Egyptians arts and sciences. I have no idea where he got that, how he knows that. I'm sure he knows more than I do about that stuff. But that was where he got some of his property there. And this goes on the fact that God fulfilled his blessings to him with these riches that he gave him there. That's going to come into play as we get into the whole lesson here about these riches that Abraham's got. It's a very important part. So he was rich here in flocks, silver, and gold. Question number five on your paper there. So now, seven. Lot, what? He's also rich, okay, just like Abraham was. And we've got a little problem then that comes up. Strife comes up between the herdsmen of Lot and the herdsmen of Abraham. I put down this family tree thing on the board up here, kind of sketched out the other day. A little better shot of it. Terah being Abraham's father, okay? And Abraham, we're talking about, centering around this here. Where Sarah's over here, it's his half-sister and also his wife. And we'll get all these other generations later on down here. Look at now, it's his brother Haran. And Haran's also a city and a person name here. The two mixed up. And he had a son named Lot. And this Lot is the nephew of Abraham that's with him. So you start getting the family tree in your mind if you don't have it already. Family of Asherah. And we're going to fit a lot of these names in as we go through the rest of the book here. So, Abraham, another brother Nahor, and brother Haran, and then his son Lot, which we're up to now. And I said, we'll pick a lot of these up as we go through here. Okay, so strife comes up here, so they could not dwell together. Their flocks were apparently massive, very, very large, required a lot of land, a lot of space for grazing of these flocks. Also, looking there, it says that the Canaanites and Perizzites occupied a part of the land, or at least a commentator said that. I mean, I shouldn't say it's in the text there. But they already have a lot of land occupied, people live there. So now Abraham and Lot move in. So now they got to have space to go with other people already there. And then envy seems to come up between the herdsmen of Abraham and Lot. And so this could have eventually split the families up if something wasn't done about it. So the whole story now we're going to get into now is what's done about this great strife that's coming up here. All this wealth these two gentlemen have got and the problem that's caused this strife. So, question number 8. Who does what? Abraham gives Lot the choice. So, to take the part of the land that you want. So, Abraham lets Lot choose. Now, who would be kind of elder to who, over who, respect for who? Think about your mind here. Abraham would be the father figure to Lot, okay, in this case here. But Abraham is going to let Lot make the choice. Who would you think had the right to make the choice? Abraham, you would think. Okay, we have that right. But he doesn't. He gives it to Lot first and keeps in peace and lets him make his choice first. So, my question out here then says, lessons. Don't get into the rest of the lesson yet that we got to talk about here. But just from this right here, what comes to mind is, what lessons can we pick up out of this point right here? Okay? Or lack of on Lot's part here. Okay? How about Abraham? What's he doing? Right, he put somebody else before himself. Even though he would have had the right to do that, just because I had the right doesn't mean I have to take that right. If to keep peace would have for me to yield to someone else, then what am I going to do? Even though I have that right, I'm going to yield that right to the other person for the sake of keeping peace there. So that's what Abraham did here, apparently. So yielded to keep peace, even when I'm right, or when I have the rights, or when it's mine, or when I should have the choice, I can give over to the other person. Though it should be my right, I'm willing to give it up. Now, how many of you are teaching smaller children this next time? But here's a good spot. You can get some lessons in the next two or three slides here. I've got several of them we're going to look at here. This is one of them. Just because it's mine, it's because I have that right. I mean, I have to exercise that right. I can yield it to the other person. Okay? So, number 9 on your paper there. What did Lot choose? Abraham gave him the choice. So what did Lot choose? Well-watered plains of the Jordan. Okay? He chose it and dwelt in the city of Sodom. So let's back a minute to the slide of the map over here. Should have put one back in here and didn't do it. All right. So they're in this general area here, well-watered plains of the Jordan over here, and you can think about this area down here. I don't have another map, so I'm going to back up on this in a minute. Zoar, we talk about several times in less than a night. The cities of Sodom and Gomorrah, of course, are destroyed by the time the maps up here. They're generally thought to be in this area down here, at the foot of the Dead Sea. So Sodom, Gomorrah, and Zoar are going to come up in the lesson tonight. So this is the well-watered plains, and it's even stated in one of the things I read that quite possibly it came because of Jordan, like the Nile went in Egypt, would flood the lands down through here, make it rich land for the grazing of the sheep down on this Jordan Valley down here. So that's what Lot looking saw, was the well-watered plains of Jordan, and that's where he wanted to go to take his flocks. So let's go back where we are. So, Lot's choice. The well-watered plains of the Jordan Valley down through there. Now, what should he have done? Let's think about Lot now. What Abraham did, and then he's yielding to Lot. What should Lot have done, and what are the lessons out of that? You know, that's the choice to Abraham, being the junior, the younger, in submission to Abraham, who took him in, apparently, when his father died. I think he would have had that respect for Abraham. But he didn't. He took his own way, trusted his own judgment, got out what he saw, the well-watered plains, that's what I want, and saw that, and went out there to put his flocks there. So, think about this slide now. He didn't consider, or he didn't look beyond here and now. The exact what I see right now in my eyes. That's what I see, that's what I want. Okay? He looked what he saw and said, that's what I want, and got it. Did not look beyond the consequences that were down there. Okay? What else? Yeah. He didn't say, okay, Abraham, I gave me the choice, but let's talk about it. Give me some advice. Give me some thoughts on what should I do here? Help me make the right decision. You asked me to make, you give me the choice to make, but did that mean that Lot turned right around and say, would you help me with that choice? You help me out? Help me make the right choice here? Yes, ma'am.
Also.
Right. Just because he had the choice, he didn't have to choose the best for himself. Okay? He could have said, out of respect, right? You give me the choice. I'm going to choose the lesser, and that you have the other over here. He had concern only for, apparently, for the temporal things. He wasn't looking. It's what I can see right now. And think about where it might lead him down the road. The spiritual implications of what was coming down the way here. Okay? So Lot's choice. Abraham gave him the choice, and then Lot made the choice. So, he chose the land without considering the characters of the inhabitants. Best we can tell, what advantages or disadvantages might afford him in the spiritual things. And this choice, as we shall see down the road, provide for the ruin of his family as a whole there. So, yeah, that's exactly right. Okay, I want it now. What happens down the road, I'll worry about that then. The lady at work, that's pretty much, I don't mean to be totally ugly about her, but as far as her, a lot of things she looks at with respect for the politics of the office, don't get it in the wrong way. But you're not worried about what's down the road. What can I do for me now? Type thing. And that kind of goes with our whole world we raise our kids in if we're not careful. Because we're so used to the fast foods, pull it up, give it to me now. Off in the microwave, give it to me now. Send an email so they got the message now. All those things like that. The now. Now, question. These two guys and gentlemen had been blessed very significantly with physical blessings. Did these blessings bring peace and happiness? What caused them to split in the first place? Strife. Okay. The servants couldn't get along. We've got to change in order to keep peace. So it's not always that just having more and more and more and more makes us happy. There are some consequences of having more and more and more and more. Figuring out how to deal with it. Now, Abraham obviously saw the problem coming and gave Lot to show us. But even in that, he had to give up the company of Lot. We've been with him for apparently some time now. But his family, that standpoint. And let's jump ahead, since most of us know the story already. What's going to be the ultimate downfall? What's Lot going to lose because of this choice? Wife? Okay. His possessions? What does he do after the destruction? The daughters do to him? Get him drunk? Incest with them? As far as we know, he has nothing left after that. Didn't look at his surroundings. People there were extremely, extremely wicked. Yeah. Yeah, there's no sign that he... I'm not going to head the story here. There's no sign he was able to take influence of anybody to go out of Sodom with him. Not even the men his daughters were engaged to, or whatever, sons-in-law, it calls them there. Whatever that exactly meant there. Even they wouldn't go with him later on. So the influence from that standpoint was gone. So, what about our choices? What do we learn from this? I'll do one. You do the next one. Respect for others, especially those who are older than we are, who might be able to give us better advice. Okay? Look farther down the road than just blinders we got on the front of us here. What's going to happen down the road? It's the choices we make now. Selfishness? Okay? Selfishness, he said. Anybody else? Listen to counsel? Thinking our own way? Talked about most of these already. Just kind of recap some of them. Trusting our own judgment? Goes back to the counsel up here. Guided by false appearances? What did Lot see? Well, water plains. Okay? That's all I see. Didn't consider the associates? What influence are our associates having on us? We're around. None. I can handle it. Didn't consider the spiritual aspect of it. Thus in the ruin of his whole family. So, we've already talked about this a little bit. Verse 13 here, the men of Sodom were wicked and sinful against the Lord. And so, that brought on the ruin and the downfall of Lot because of it. Okay, comments or questions about that? Anybody get any thoughts that we haven't covered from that? That's a very valid point. And I left that off. I was thinking about the Abraham there, but you're right. There's one guy that always sticks out in my head when that point comes up. David. That's right. David. So often, David stopped and asked the Lord's blessings. Asked how to do this. And the one time he didn't, lost a man's life. And a lot of embarrassment, a lot of turmoil. And the very words David said, we fail not to seek the Lord's guidance. You are. Yep. Okay, number 10. What promise did God repeat to Abraham? Verse 14, what did he say? Okay. You looked up your eyes from the place where you are, look north, look to the south, look to the east, look to the west, and look in every direction. For all the land which you see, I'll give to you and to your descendants forever. Also, descendants are going to be multiplied. Like the, and this is the point where we get in about the end, it's like the dust of the earth and the stars at this point here. So, that. So, he's going to give it to his descendants. We've already talked about that in an earlier class up there. And, we'll play on words here a minute. I will give it to you. I will give it to you. I'm going to give you this land. He's going to give them the land. Why, when the spies went up to Kadesh Barnea, they just walked right on in and say, move out. God gave it to us. What does the word give here mean? I'm going to allow you to have it. I'm going to make it where you can have it. Okay? But it doesn't mean it's just hold out the palm of your hand, lay it in there. Otherwise, there were no battles when they went in through the whole period we've got of invasion and conquest. There had been no invasion and conquest. And then walked in and here's the land. Anything there that applies to us, that little phrase, that God gives us salvation. He promised us heaven. John 14, I go to prepare a place for you, I'll come back and get you. But, don't just walk in like they didn't walk in the land here. There's so many parallels between this promise, the promise we have. Okay. With the promises repeated, that was given to Abraham, to his descendants forever. Acts 7, verse 5, back to when Stephen's talking, we looked at this last week, some, I think the first four verses. With the gift of God to him, the phrase again, I give it to you type thing, on behalf of his seed. Abraham didn't actually possess the land, he lived in the land. How much land did he own there? How much land? What did he wind up buying? They gave him that Peter for a burial place. And that's it. As far as we know, that's all he ever owned. But he gave it to his descendants over there. Okay, that's pretty much chapter 13. Anything else on that? 14 gets into some battles. Number 11 kind of introduces us to it. While Abraham was living near Hebron, what happened to Lot? Now, Lot's already moved away from him, but something happens to Lot. What is it? It gets captured, okay? So, the parents of the king tells some more here. And from, let's see. Hang on, I got one point I want to make back here. Make sure I didn't jump over it. Yeah. Make one comment I read back here. Back on Abraham's possessions. I don't get past this before I get into chapter 14. I ran across this Arabic proverb. Think about possessions and all the stuff that we have. This proverb says, one house, one day's food, and one suit of raiment are sufficient for thee. And if thou die before noon, thou hast half too much. All I need is enough for today. I have all that stuff down the road over there. I thought that was an interesting little proverb. I'm sorry I didn't pass it at the right time there. Okay, back to our kings at war. Apparently there's a king, a foreign king, a foreign outside the land of Canaan here, who had been oppressing these Canaanites for how long? 12 years? In the 13th year, they said, we've had enough. So they rebelled and started this rebellion against these kings. So this king goes and gets three of his comrades and says, okay, that's where you're going to be. We're going to take care of this thing here. So he gets three assistants and these five kings of from Cana there, all down that southern area down there. We mentioned Zoar, Sodom and Gomorrah a while ago, down the foot of the Dead Sea. These five Canaanite kings then rebel against it. He gets the three to come help him, so it's four against five, but the four prevail, and they take off the people captive over there. And that's when Lot gets taken off with them. So Lot's captured. They took away Lot, Abram's brother's son, who left him Sodom, all his goods, and they departed with him there. So Lot is now taken into captivity. So Abraham does what about it? Number 12. Paper up, eh? 318. Right digits, different number. 318 of his trained servants. Now, I don't know how many warriors these four kings had. I would guess more than 318. Okay? I would assume that these four kings didn't come down 318 people and all those other five and take them off and go with them. But Abraham takes 318 of his trained servants. About riches? 318 of his trained servants? How many more did he got besides that? I don't know. There's 318 of them who are capable of going to war with Abraham. He takes 318 of his trained servants and goes out to rescue Lot. He travels north as far as Dan. And then on to Damascus. Now, I don't have a map up here on the thing, but if you remember, Dan is the father, like northern city of the whole of Canaan. Damascus went up past that. So from down here in Sodom and Gomorrah area at the bottom of the Dead Sea, it's roughly 70 miles from the top of the Dead Sea to the bottom of the Sea of Galilee. 70 miles there. So you're looking at 100 miles or more. Abraham went chasing after Lot to bring him back. I don't know, but probably, okay, rephrase that. From where Lot and them were, at least down here then. That would be, you know, Abraham may have still been at Bethel. Right. Good point. The memory by then? Okay. So it's still quite a distance that he travels to go get him. So verse 6 says he brought back all the goods, brother Lot's and his goods, and the women and the people. Now think about this. How these barbarians have treated the women that are gone with them there? I don't know, but it could not have been too pleasant, more than likely. It's significant that phrase there, that he brought back the women and the people. They were taken captivity there. Taken captive there. So Abraham goes after him, 318 trained men, rescues Lot, brings back all the possessions that he had taken. And from those five kings, who knows how much they had taken off. They brought these possessions back. Now, when he comes back in, where do we get to our paperwork here? Yeah, 13. Who immediately came back in? Melchizedek. Okay. All right. Somebody tell me all you know about Melchizedek. And don't take too long. He's a king and a priest. And that's about all we know about him. Two places he's mentioned. If I remember right, just two. Here and where else? Hebrews chapter 7, the first 10 verses or so. That's all we know about Melchizedek. He was a king and a priest. Called King of Salem, more than likely Jerusalem, King of Jerusalem. Very mysterious. Know nothing about him really, other than his name and his office and where he lived. About it, as far as that part's concerned. Type of Christ, a lot of ways that he's referred to, and his name signifies my righteous King or King of Righteousness, Melchizedek. His office, he was a priest of the God Most High, prince in peace. That was not uncommon for the patriarchs. They were leaders of their family. And they were the one who would offer the sacrifices for the family. So he would be the priest of the tribes, the patriarchs would. So it's not an uncommon type thing to see in that day and time. He was a priest of, this is a very key phrase here, priest of the God Most High. Is he? Okay. Three places then. I stand corrected. Thanks, Mike. Okay. At least three then, so we say. Okay, where was he? King of Salem. Salem means peace. We're parallels here. Christ is called the Prince of Peace from that. In God and man. A bit more about Melchizedek. Okay, number 14 on your paper. We'll wrap this thing up here very shortly. What did Melchizedek do? Blessed Abraham. Okay, the word blessed means what? Speak well of. Okay, it means blessed means to speak well of. Really, so Melchizedek blessed or spoke well of Abraham. And what did Abraham do? Gave him a tithe, a tenth of what? Everything they had taken on the the raid when they brought these people back. When they're coming back now from this war, from this battle of Rescue and Lot, these five kings, and so all this possession they had brought back, Abraham gave Melchizedek a tenth of it, a tithe of that there. So now, what did Abraham keep for his part of the it's number 15? What did he get for his part of the battle? Nothing. Let the others have it there. Okay, took only his expenses and the pay for those who were with him. Yeah. So a tenth of the spoils he had taken from the Confederate kings, what he gave to Melchizedek, he's attributed to the Most High God. And there, so Abraham's encounter with Melchizedek. Melchizedek blesses Abraham. Abraham gives him a tenth or a tithe of what he had taken on the raid as he had rescued Lot to come back in. Quick look at 14. Anybody else? Thoughts about either one of them? In Sodom, yeah. Good point. Yeah. Yeah, he didn't go out and move in, let's say, Sodom first thing, even a big city type thing there. No, he just got close. After getting close, he got drawn closer and closer and closer and sucked into it there a little bit. Okay, we've got a couple minutes left, and some of you go back to for the A.J. Rollins Bible class at ABS many, many, many years ago. He'd say, get your paper out, numbers 1 to 25. Okay? So get your paper out, and on the back of that paper you got there, flip it over, and numbers 1 to 25 right quick. Let's have a little review type thing here. This is not a test. This is a review. Okay. Okay. We have plenty of papers up here. I will share some with you. Believe me, that you didn't bring your pad there. Okay. What I want to do is I want to simply state a name, and I want you to write down the period of Bible history that character fits into. Okay? And some of you are relatively new to the 17 periods of Bible history. I understand that. They're on the board up here. You can read them where you are. So this is just a learning type exercise. So if you know where it is, we'll go through it in a minute and kind of pick it out. And there are some trickies in here a little bit. There's some nice, simple ones to get started off with. And then we'll see where it goes from there. So number one, Noah. Noah. Which of the periods of 17 periods of Bible history does Noah fit into? And you get to ask no questions. Just write down your best shot. We'll go through a minute and talk about them. Okay? Number one is Noah. Number two is Solomon. Who is Solomon? Which period of history does Solomon fit into? Number three is Gideon. Three is Gideon. Where does Gideon fit in? Number four is Barabbas. Barabbas. Number five, what period does Moses fit in? Moses. Number six, Luke. Luke. Seven is Esther. This is a good drill for young folks too, by the way. I'm going to ease up on some of them a little bit, but Esther. Number eight is Apollos. Apollos. Number nine, Ham. Nine, Ham. Ten should be very easy. Lot. Ten is Lot. 11, Melchizedek. 13, Hezekiah. Right, excuse me. 12, right. 12, I'm sorry. 12, Hezekiah. 12 is Hezekiah. So 10 is Lot, 11 is Melchizedek, 12 is Hezekiah. 13, I messed you up. Okay. 9 is Ham, 10 is Lot, 11 is Melchizedek, 12 is Hezekiah. 13, Og. 14 is Daniel. 15, Lydia. 16, Philip. 16, Philip. 17, Nehemiah. 17, Nehemiah. 18, Elizabeth. 18, Elizabeth. 19, Elisha. Elisha. 20, Achan. 20, Achan. 21, Eli. 1, Eli. 22, Simeon. 2, Simeon. 3, Nathan. 3, Nathan. 4, Alexander the Great. 25, Amos. Amos. Now, tell me, I missed it. We'll go through them here. Okay. Okay. Number one, Noah. Blood. Okay. Two, Solomon. United Kingdom. 3, Gideon. Judges. 4, Barabbas. Life of Christ. Okay. 5, Moses. Exodus and water in the wilderness. Okay. Got a double one there. 2. Before we get interesting now. Luke. Okay. Luke and the life of Christ. Wrote about it based on what he was told. Now, where do you split? We're certainly not have fun. Where do you split early church versus the Christians? That's going to affect a lot of these things we have down through here before you make that split, okay? I make it personally, it's a mouth thing, and you do what you want to. Where do the letters of the Christians start? Acts chapter 18, I think it was. Okay. I split it in my mind at after the council, after the conference in Jerusalem 15. Because the early church, Acts 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, even 9 with Saul, 10, 11 with Cornelius, 12, of course, is persecution. 13, 14 is the first journey. 15 is a conference. And then 16 starts the second journey. And that's on that second journey where the letter started. So just to draw a place arbitrarily in my mind, I just kind of split it there between 15 and 16. And even though letters don't start until, I guess, chapter 18. So I got letters to Christians there. Bill went, Esther, I got captivity. Apollos, letters to the Christians. Again, the way I split them out there. Ham's the flood. Lot and Melchizedek are both patriarchs. Hezekiah, about quit somebody. Okay? He was king when Israel was taken captive. So, you got divided kingdom and Judah alone there. Okay? Og's wandering in the wilderness. Daniel's captivity. Lydia, again, my definition goes letters to Christians. Philip. Life of Christ and early church. Why? Philip, an apostle. And Philip in Acts chapter 8. Nehemiah, returned from captivity. Elizabeth, life of Christ. Elisha, divided kingdom. Achan, Nation Conquest, AI, right? Eli, Judges, Simeon, Patriarchs, and Life of Christ. Why? And the temple, Adam and Simeon in the temple, okay? And I don't know about the Exodus, where you fit in there, but still left over there as descendants of wood. Nathan, United Kingdom, Alexander the Great, years of Silas, Amos, United Kingdom. Then he prophesied to Israel and Judah, both, I think. Anyhow, a little fun there, racky brains a little bit.